So, Roland, thanks so much for making the time to go through the Scaling the Carbon Markets research project that we've been working on together over the last few months. Just to recap, I guess, in terms of what we're going to be walking through, everything that we talk about is based on a survey of about 135 organizations around the world, different profiles, different geographies. So I guess the opening question for you, Roland, is really is coming into this. What were you aiming to kind of, what did you want to get out of this in the context of the carbon markets and where they are today?
Thanks, Barney. And I'm really happy to be here and be able to talk you through that. It's a very interesting question and it's a very interesting time at the moment. I think when we look at why we were doing this exercise is really to understand in a very fast-changing industry and also with a lot of events in the background, a feeling of where the industry stakeholders and the participants and the customers are. So whether you're a project financer or whether you're carbon projects or a carbon credit user, a corporate and a consumer of those credits, or is really understand what are the pain points, what is the maturity of the market, how do we facilitate that market? So essentially, when you look at it, the voluntary carbon markets as opposed to the mandatory ones, it's quite a unique challenge. I think it was in the late 90s where the first carbon credits were officially traded under the Kyoto Protocol. And it's really a nascent market. When you look at other asset classes, commodities and financials and equities, those markets have been around for hundreds of years, over 100 years. And it takes a while for mature market structure to scale. But we're in a unique position where this carbon asset class, both voluntary and mandatory, has arisen, and there's an urgent need, both by international governments, international cooperation, and also corporates to accelerate and also mature the market quickly. So hence, the study was designed to understand what the clear set of problem statements are and help us understand how do we prioritize a plan of action that can help and inform market development to scale these markets.
Yeah. Brilliant. No, thanks. And I mean, obviously, as you said, you know, this is a market that's growing at breakneck speed. I mean, it has to be in order to fulfill the mission statement of the market. One of the things that we saw in the research was just this huge amount of demand, particularly in terms of new entrants coming into the market on the project side, but also on the corporates and the financial investor side. I mean, where do you see the big kind of growth drivers, if you like, coming into the carbon markets at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few tailwinds in terms of drivers. There's obviously regulatory, but also tariff, taxation, and carbon regulation itself, and the collective rulemaking that the international community and also governments are doing, both at the international level and the local level as well. So we're seeing across Asia, Europe, and the US unprecedented rulemaking about how to do that. And alongside of that, when you have tariff policy and trade policy and taxation policy aligned to drive that, you also have quite a few tailwinds for the market. And aside from that as well, you've got the merging and in some aspects, the definite targets of mandatory markets involving use of the voluntary and removal credits in the mandatory markets. And there's quite a few milestones in jurisdictions that have been set for that to happen. So that's on the regulatory and rulemaking side. I think on the corporate side, you see unprecedented commitments by corporates to have a line of sight and a path down to neutral emissions by various dates of 2030 or 2050. And I think those commitments over the past 18 months or so are becoming stronger and stronger. So now that companies are making those commitments, then now it's a question of how will they fulfill it? And fulfilling that means, okay, how do they use voluntary removals or offset credits to meet their commitments that they're making to their shareholders and also regulators as well?
So if you've got those two kind of ends of the spectrum, if you like, one of the things that seems to be kind of interesting is how the parts of the chain in between the intermediaries, and especially yes, the project financiers and obviously then the marketplaces themselves, how able they are to fulfill and help those two ends of the spectrum to meet in terms of demand. Because, you know, there seems to be a little bit of a bubble in the pipe, but particularly on the commercial bank side. I was curious to see what your take was on that in terms of actually demands and limitations around that.
Yeah, so we've spoken about the demand drivers, and we see in the survey investors and corporates expecting high growth of up to 61% by 2025. But as you mentioned, Barney, it's about how that supply comes through, whether it's through industrial plant-based projects. there is a pipeline of projects not only being coming online to provide in the removal space the credits that will satisfy that demand, but there's also a pipeline of projects that require financing itself to actually generate that supply. So if you go all the way down to the supply chain, I think there's a variety of financing and also project initiation that needs to happen so that supply can scale up with the demand. And I think that's like any commodities market or production-based market, you've got to get that supply chain working. And there is a central role for equity and debt financing to play in that market. So essentially, a lot of the challenges is ensuring that those growth rates are met by evolving the ecosystem so that financing can be injected smoothly and support that growth in voluntary market credits as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we're talking about kind of, as you said, building out the two ends of the spectrum, the ability to fulfill both ends, I guess one of the things that also seems to be coming clear from the research as well is that ultimately there are many different reasons why people are in this marketplace in the first place. So we've talked about commercial banks, we've talked about corporates, but you also have financial investors, intermediaries who are there to make financial returns. I was kind of curious to see what you're seeing from the kind of the target takeaways, the target objectives of why people are in the market, and then what that means from a market design perspective, really.
I mean, that's a great question, Barney. So when we look at the survey results, there's different objectives driving different requirements. As we see from the survey, 50% of the commercial banks are looking to decarbonize their current loan and financing books, but need a wide range of projects and also duration to meet their needs. So not all of it's going to come from And not all of it is able to come from a single type of credit. 67% of corporates are being driven by their shareholders. We see that as an overwhelming stat. And then 45% of investors are looking for financial returns, whilst they are also looking to offset carbon taxes and decarbonize their existing portfolios. So you do see, as with any asset class, it's a lot of people coming into it to meet different needs. And I think for building proper price discovery and transparency, it is an overwhelming mixture of ecosystem of market participants there.
And for me, what's so interesting about that is that it ultimately, you know, rather than moving towards a simplification model, we're obviously moving towards much more diversity in terms of types of contract and credit, you know, types of participant objectives and things. And so we're moving to a place of increasing sophistication and complexity as opposed to simplification, which a little bit is at odds with ultimately the big problem that we face in the market.
It does. I think at the moment, there is a lot of stakeholders and market participants who are trying to understand the different type of credits that are available, the quality and the metrics that those come with, and be able to be confident in both the standards that are there and also the pricing. Mm-hmm. So essentially, a lot of it is about understanding with a lot of the contracts how to price something, and especially on the sell side, and project financing side, if you know how to price something, then you can. It's much easier to provide debt financing to that. At the moment, from the survey, I think 30% of the industry lack confidence in pricing of the carbon credits today, and that's one of the reasons for conservatism on the part of funding banks. So 60% of them in the survey lack confidence in the pricing of the funding of project financiers and funding banks, and they're not alone. So 1/3 of corporates and investors still have a low confidence. So we need to work out how we introduce standardization, help with transparency of pricing to build that confidence in order to unlock more participation in the market.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and this is the thing. So if we're building a little bit of it's not a house entirely built on sand, but ultimately we're trying to scale. We're trying to bring in all these new participants that we've been talking about. We're trying to basically increase the sophistication of the investment spectrum in terms of product availability. We're doing all of that on top of a problem of confidence in the underlying assets. So where do you think this problem of confidence is really, when we track it back, where do you feel that problem roots back to?
When we look at that and in the survey, when you break it down, the responses by the different stakeholders are very insightful. So when we look at it at a process level, 52% of firms struggle to access good verification data. So that's data about how much emissions are, how much the credits, how much the projects actually do. So very simple technical data. And then 49% complain about the inconsistency of that data across multiple registries and projects. That means extensive manual work and, importantly, inability to compare and contrast at scale. So faced with an average of 6 to 8 registries each, you can see why firms are struggling, especially when due diligence documents at each registry can be in different formats, different languages, with different metrics. So standardization is indeed one of the things the survey shows that it is required. And as we've seen with recent issuances, such as the World Bank's green bond with Citi, deals are very bilateral, bespoke, and variable, which creates a risk management challenge for up to 50% of the market.
And I think for me, that's so interesting, because ultimately, really, what for me that says is that there's a risk that this is moving much, much more in the kind of private equity direction, as opposed to the kind of futures and options kind of market, if you like, where we're having to spend a vast amount of time on basically on due diligence, on really a small number of contracts, but a high depth of data, as opposed to a scalability of contracts, if that resonates. And it seems like some of these new deals that are coming out, but they're so bespoke to manage this, that we're kind of, there's a risk of us moving in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think it's important to ensure that we create the right market where the threshold costs for transactions and also execution and settlement is low. So getting the right market structure is really important. But as you said, creating liquidity and the ability of observable prices, understanding what you pay for different levels of credits with different dimensions, such as permanence, whether it's 100-year or 1,000 years, and different methodologies. It is really important, as we've seen in other markets, to allow the maximum number of investors to meet the maximum number of suppliers, to have transparency and to have standards. I think we've seen that in other asset classes. And what that does is it brings liquidity in. Everyone knows what they'll get for a certain credit, and there's reliability on that. And that will allow more participation. So as more participation comes in, then you'll get a much better depth of understanding. And some of that will be geographical or regional, but also understanding what's a fair value and how do you create a concept of fair value is really important. Yeah. So in survey, I think fragmentation is a huge challenge for almost 100% of the market. Settlements are a scale activity, and it's so important to bring wholesale institutional financing into this to allow credit risk and settlements of transactions to take place. And then another growth challenge is lack of institutional risk management, which is a problem in the survey for up to 33% of the market.
I think that settlements piece is such a great manifestation of what you're saying, really, that, you know, ultimately, if we kind of stick to highly fragmented kind of puddles of liquidity, as we're chatting about, and basically in very, very subscale infrastructures, you know, it's no great surprise that the cost of settlement is a standout problem, because ultimately settlements they're a scale issue, right? You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's almost like a proxy. You've got market liquidity and then you've got the settlement costs. And if things are working well, both of those are going in the right direction. At the moment, we've got small pools of liquidity and therefore dramatically high settlement costs, which are kind of very symptomatic of this fragmentation piece. And equally, presumably, one of the big reasons why the big institutional investors are staying away a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's about collectively, how do we work? How does we work as a market, whether it's financial market infrastructures, national governments, it's institutions, sell-side institutions, project financiers, and also the suppliers themselves. And that's a lot of work that we do at Puro in terms of how to bring that financing and the standardization into play, and also generate more metrics around that.
So if one of the big problems is around problems in confidence around pricing, I suppose the natural question is, we're obviously not just sitting on our hands. We're seeing good solutions emerge. And there's an interesting theme, as far as I can tell, really around just this, you know, people are paying a premium for visibility and transparency. I was just curious to see if you're seeing that in specific areas where you're seeing people actually, you know, even given current markets constructs, where you start seeing kind of calls for optimism.
Yeah, I think definitely. So there is a number of solutions that are out there in the engineered carbon removal space. That's a good example where people are paying a significant premium for science-based verification, certainty and permanence, and a high degree of visibility and integrity on project sponsors. So that integrity and visibility is valued, and so essentially addresses the quality issue.
So I guess then, I mean, if we've talked about, you know, there's some great opportunities out there, and obviously there's a pent-up demand for transparency. I mean, when we just take a step back to your point about what does the industry to-do list look like? You know, we've gone through the problem statements, but what do we do about it and in what order? What would your response be to that based on what we've seen?
There's obviously a lot of investor education that's required, and also trying to work with a number of people, stakeholders in industry, and we've seen that at COP28, is to drive standardization and create legal and regulatory frameworks so that investors can understand what a carbon credit is and the different dimensions by which that can be evaluated on a data metric-based standard. And that the capture and dissemination of that information is very easy to have, just like in other asset classes. Once you get that, then you reduce the friction and you reduce the cost in terms of getting involved in the market. And I think examples, this is a massive area of focus, and there's a number of frameworks. If you look at ICVCM's core carbon principles, that's a very good start, and being able to coalesce around those and then forming rule books for the industry. If you do those kind of things, then going back to what we talked before, you get more institutional involvement, you get better risk management, you get better understanding of your portfolios in terms of the carbon credits, and then the financing capacity will increase, and that unlocks a lot of supply to match that demand as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you build confidence in the demand as well.
Yeah. It goes back to what you said earlier on. If you can price the risk, ultimately, then suddenly actually all the doors open, right? And ultimately, that has to be systematically pricing risk, because somebody said there was a great thing about pricing carbon credits today is very qualitative, and banks don't like qualitative, which I thought was a lovely way of kind of encapsulating that. But and so I suppose the final question then is, so we talked about investor education, standardization as a way of basically facilitating risk transparency and visibility. On whose shoulders does that responsibility fall, really? I mean, it could be anywhere, but it does seem that, you know, from the research, particularly one group who stand right in the center of all of this.
Yeah. So look, I think registries have a great role to champion and lead that. I think in our survey, 66% of the industry is clearly looking at registries to drive that standardization, but it will involve all stakeholders, because as we discussed, it's about understanding what, not just how the registries create the standards, but also how people can rely on the standards, gather the data for those standards. Mm-hmm. But given the role that registries play in terms of verification and standardization and accreditation of suppliers and projects, the registries have to play a central role in transforming the industry and helping it to realize those extremely challenging objectives. So, and in that role, like obviously, NASDAQ and Puro Earth are playing a significant role in trying to push that standard forward. But it's going to have to be a cooperation across the whole industry, and also generate interoperability across standards, but also bring those standards to help build liquidity and connectivity between trading venues and registries as well. So I think it's being able to route the right credits from the right registries to the right markets where they're traded. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, so you very quickly end up looking like a kind of little bit like the MTF market in Europe, where ultimately you can clear settle in different locations around, but ultimately it's all happening seamlessly every day on an interoperable basis. That's the kind of target operating model, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. I mean, it is slightly different. You will have national regulation and there will be national credits and national markets. You'll have international markets, but really being able to help suppliers navigate that and ensure that they get the right price and find the right liquidity for their projects, and at the same time help corporates source the right type of credits where they need to meet them. And that may be done in national or international scale. And obviously, a lot of the regulatory regime around taxation, carbon regulation, and also tariffs sort of will drive that. But it is, at the end of the day, is providing an observable, transparent, liquid, and clearly priced market that ultimately will help this market scale.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's a pretty great conclusion to, I think, the conversation. So thank you very much for running through all of that. And anyone who does want to download the research, then obviously they can visit Nasdaq.com or thevalueexchange.co and get reading. So thanks very much.
Fantastic. Thanks, Barney. And it is a fascinating area and lots to do. So we definitely want to work with everyone else and welcome any feedback on the survey or any opportunities to work, do some further work with the stakeholders in the market as well.